Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Nightlight. So glad you could join us tonight. It's going to be a great show. Before we get going, though, I want to thank Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. Please look for him on the Google him. He is a native storyteller, and he and his wife have been preserving this amazing tradition for decades and decades, and it is an amazing way of preserving history, cosmology, and the stories of creation for generations yet to come. Much better than the written word in my philosophy, and probably if spirituality was taught the same way, there would be a lot more spiritual stuff going on out there. I have an amazing author with me tonight. I have Jonathan Hammond with me, and he's written a book called The Shaman's Mind. And I want to tell you a little bit about it, and this is from the book. To learn to think like a shaman is to attune yourself to a magical spectrum of infinite possibilities, unseen truths, alternative realities, and spiritual support. When a shaman likes what's happening, they know how to make it better, and when they don't, they know how to change it. This book teaches the reader how to align and transform their own mind into one that sees the world through the lens of the indigenous healers of old. Jonathan is a Maui-based teacher, energy healer, shamanic practitioner, and spiritual counselor. And before beginning his work in holistic health and spirituality, he had a career as an award-winning actor, appearing on Broadway and on television. He's a graduate of Harvard University and the University of Michigan, a certified master teacher in shamanic Reiki, and the Advanced Graduate Studies Advisor for Shamanic Reiki Worldwide. He teaches classes in shamanism, energy healing, spirituality, and HUNA at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies and around the world. In addition to his background in energy medicine, Jonathan completed 4 years of training at One Spirit Learning Alliance, that's OSLA, in New York City, and was ordained as an interfaith minister in 2008. He's currently a faculty member at OSLA, where he teaches shamanism and interspiritual counseling, and he is the founding leader of OSLA's monthly shamanic circle. So, welcome to the show, Jonathan. So glad you're here today.
Aloha from Maui. It's so great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad that we've managed to get our time straight here. Actually, one of the things that fascinates me about anybody in the spiritual field, and I have to always ask the question, how did Hawaii find you?
How did Hawaii find me? Well, I had the good fortune of coming here many times. And I was already, when I first started coming here, I was already certainly a spiritual person and a Reiki practitioner and even a shamanic practitioner. And I never really thought, I just enjoyed Hawaii, but I never really thought to look here for spiritual influence. I didn't really know of, other than, you know, what you hear about aloha, I had never really heard of any of the spirituality, and I had never linked shamanism with Hawaii. So it just wasn't something that was on my radar. And then I had a series of experiences with the land itself, the that were really unmistakable and beautiful and mystical, and they kept happening. I mean, I would see pictures in the stars. I had a which I read about in the book. I had a visitation on the volcano with what I can only call Great Spirit or the Source or God or Creator. I would have experiences with animals here, and still do to this day. There isn't a day that goes by since I've moved here where I'm not in direct contact with swimming with a turtle. That's an everyday experience for me. In fact, the other day I was high-fived by a turtle, and I didn't even realize what was happening until I felt something graze my hand. It was a turtle. I've had really crazy experiences in Hawaii, and that made me start to look at, is this land trying to tell me something? Is it trying to show me something? And that's where I discovered Ho'oponopono and Huna, and what I found in that practice, Ho'oponopono, and in the Huna philosophy, was sort of a synchronization of everything that I thought I knew about healing, all in one place. And it was I was a spiritual practitioner for many years and thought I had sort of come up with my own thing, you know, based on other paradigms and other schools of thought. But it had really become my own thing. And then when I started looking into the Huna philosophy and Hawaiian spirituality, what I found was, oh, I was tuning into something that someone had actually already established in Polynesia. Mm-hmm. And it was a crazy realization. And that began a real affinity and love for and deep course of study in the Hawaiian shamanic traditions, which really has led to my work currently.
Well, I think one thing that, and I told you before we started, that I had a friend that said, oh, Huna, that's just New Age. And I said to him, it's New Age if 3,000 years old, predating Christianity, is New Age. And I think that's something that most people don't realize, that Huna is ancient. It's been out there and gently practiced for thousands and thousands of years. And
well, yeah,
if
people
you
don't
can,
know. You know, go ahead. Sorry.
No,
people don't. Sorry.
I'll
go ahead,
up.
Barbara.
Okay. If you could explain Huna, to us, then maybe that would help.
Yeah. Well, even predating Huna, even predating Hawaii, there was once many. This is millennia, but there was once a huge landmass in the middle of the South Pacific called Mu, the continent Mu, M-U. Some people call it Lemuria, but the Hawaiians wouldn't. The Hawaiians would call it the Mu continent. And the people of Mu, the Mu people, who weren't really a people, they were said to be kind of divine beings, sky beings. And the folklore is that the Mu people, these people from the stars, from the Pleiades, were actually attracted to the water in the South Pacific because there was just so much water, such access to water. And water is considered the DNA of the planet. And so these high beings wanted to essentially infect the water with love, with aloha, with that God molecule. And because everything is dependent on water and water flows through us, it was at that time on the planet, as the Earth was waking up, that the Mu beings came and brought this God molecule and infused it into the water. Now there's a so the idea is that this place in the middle of the South Pacific is the source of esoteric wisdom the world over. There are other theories that this place is the recipient of esoteric wisdom from the world, and we'll never really know. But there is a sense when you come to Hawaii that the land itself is very sacred and has its own power and its own consciousness, and that is very much the tradition. And so, it's from those ancient people that this esoteric wisdom, which as we get into what Hune is, you will have heard most of it before. It's so universal, and it's been said that it originated in this part of the world.
Absolutely, and I think what I love about it is so gentle, and it is so sweet, and it is so linked to nature. It should feel comfortable and familiar to anybody who looks into it.
That's right. It's more that we've heard this stuff, but then we don't apply it, or we're cynical, or we're socialized away from it, or we're worried about money, or whatever. But if we actually allow ourselves to align with the ways of being, the ways of thinking that the indigenous healers worldwide, and I've worked with shamans on three different continents, and what was fascinating about when I discovered the Huna philosophy and Hawaiian shamanism was that all the different cultures that I worked with, they were all thinking the same way. They were all, their outlook, their worldview was similar, whether or not it was South America, whether or not it was Central America, the Far East, different practices, different cultures, but essentially shamans tended to think the same way. And the problem that I had in studying shamanism was that there was a language problem, there was a cultural problem, and I was trying to figure out, I can see that they're all thinking the same way, but what are they all agreeing on? And it was in this philosophy, and Huna, this Polynesian tradition, is a philosophy more than anything else, and it's a philosophy that helps us think like shamans do, think like all indigenous people, at least the ones that I've worked with, tend to think. And so it's about using the power of mind, the power of intention, the power of the present moment, the power of love, the spiritual power, our inner power, the power of nature, and all of those things to bring about change, to create life, to heal. And it's a very, very simple philosophy, but we tend to not be disciplined enough to follow it. Or we follow it on good days when we want to be spiritual, and then we forget about it sometimes, and it sort of dilutes it. So we'll talk about all the principles of Huna, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think also, you know, you and I both use the term shaman. You want to explain a little bit about what a shaman is as well, so that people understand where we're coming from with it?
Yeah, so a shaman is is named that by the community. And a shaman is essentially a healer. And what is he or she a healer of? The shaman is the healer of relationships, the relationship we have between our mind and our body, between ourself and others, between others and others, and between everyone on the planet. And the ultimate goal or intentionality of the shaman is to heal in order to provide and support the stewardship of the earth. And so the shaman worships, reveres nature, and looks to nature as a template to teach the shaman how to be, and so the shaman can teach others how to be, because it's in our most natural state. Because when you think of, if you think of nature, what do I mean by that? If you take a forest and you leave that forest alone to do its thing, that forest is going to continue an endless process of growth and creation, right? It's just going to keep, it's going to want to just keep going. And we as beings of nature are not separate from that energy. And anything that wants to keep growing and creating, essentially there has to be an intentionality underneath that. Well, anything that wants to keep going like that is fueled by love. And so the whole thing, the energy of nature is the energy of love. And so to align with nature, to align with that force of growth and creation is to align with love. and to follow the intentionality of love or of aloha. And so we look to nature. We also, when we look at nature, we see a completely interconnected, interdependent, holistic a cosmology where everything fits together and everything is supposed to be there and everything cooperates with each other. And that is our true nature. And so to revere nature, to worship nature is because nature provides us a template to teach us how to be. And the shaman is the one who understands that and helps people return to their nature.
Well, I think that there were so many things that just absolutely struck me as beautiful and appropriate for the times in which we're now living. And one of them was that you know, you have the power within yourself to make changes, to make alterations. And I loved the part about, you know, when a shaman likes what's happening, they know how to make it better, and when they don't, they know how to change it. Mm-hmm. It sort of brings the responsibility of your life back home to where it belongs with the individual.
Yeah, Huna, it more than anything else, Huna is about taking 100% responsibility for yourself, because your thoughts, the very first principle of Huna says that the world is what you think it is. The world is what you think it is. So that means not just your experience of the world is based on how you think about it, but that the world itself, that reality itself, is created by your thoughts. Which means that what's going on between each of our individual ears is in some way contributing to and creating the reality for the all. And so we take 100% responsibility, because we're either adding to the mess or we're adding to the love and we're adding to cooperation. You know, I was once asked on an interview, you know, sort of at the end of the interview, they said, well, what can we all do? What can we all do to make the world a better place? And I said, could everyone just clean up your own mess enough so that it doesn't spill over into another person's experience? Could we just do that?
Mm-hmm.
And we're not really even there. And that is a very low bar, you know.
Well, this is true. This is true. But it's so many people want to blame others for things that are going on in their life. And I think that one of the phrases that you used frequently in the book was energy flows where attention goes. And it makes great sense. You know, if you're focused on something being miserable, you just are adding to the miserable ability of it.
That's actually one of the principles. So the first principle is the world is what you think it is. We'll get to the second one, but the third principle is that, and these are unique translations of Hawaiian words. And so the third principle, and which has been translated as energy flows where attention goes, is from a Hawaiian word called makia. And so what this principle is getting at is that where we place our focus and our attention elicit energies that bring about, that create, that bring to us the nearest physical equivalent of whatever we're placing our focus and attention on. So essentially what you're placing your attention on with consistency is inviting in energies to create that thing. And that's why, again, we're taking – yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to add to that, and so many people think of what are the negative things, what could possibly happen, what could go wrong, and by focusing on those aspects, you're almost inviting those aspects in instead of looking at the positive, which are the wonderful beneficial things that could happen in any situation, and drawing that in. So if people just remember the energy goes where your attention flows, it can help them tremendously.
Well, a revolutionary idea, and I wish that I had come up with it, but this is my Hawaiian teacher, Serge Kahili King, who really is the person who wrote these or who translated these principles. But he says one of the things that we can all do that's actually very difficult is to expect the best. to actually go through life expecting the best. And he says, if you do that, even if you don't get the best, it's going to be better than where you are now.
Yeah.
So, and there's an acronym, right? And there's an acronym that we use in HUNA, which is EWOP, E-W-O-P, and it means everything's working out perfectly. And so the idea is that you know, you are really lending your attention and lending your view, aligning your beliefs with the idea that the world truly is, that life really is happening for you. And so when those things in life happen that we don't particularly like, rather than shake our fist at the sky over them, it's about when those things happen, aha, that is a light of a new awareness. Because on some level, if something has come into my life that I don't like, a seed of that lives in me. Because the world is, I create the world based on my inner world. So if I'm experiencing something in my outer world that I don't like, that's a reflection of something about me. And that's not about blame the victim. That's about aha. That's about the light of a new awareness. And that is a very shamanic idea that it's through the darkness. It's through the darkness that we actually enter into the new way of being. In Hawaiian cosmology, the day begins at sunset, and the manifest day is born out of the darkness. So it's out of the darkness, out of the inner world, out of the difficulties that come light, that come awareness. And so if we can start to look at it that way, it all of a sudden becomes this reality where you can't really make a mistake. Imagine a reality where you really can't make a mistake, because it's just about like if for whatever reason you missed the mark, it's just about like you didn't know what you didn't know, and here's your opportunity to learn it now, and that keeps you on your path, and it's by saying,
absolutely.
You know, a lot of times, yeah. Like even when I'm working with someone one-on-one, you know, doing counseling, and, you know, I'll say something and I'll say, does that resonate? And they'll say, no, not really. And then I'll say, well, why doesn't it resonate? And we're on to it. We're on to the next thing. I just turned that no into a yes, into a further way of exploring the moment. And this is what we can do in every moment.
I think that, you know, when things when I was younger, I was a lot different. But now when things sort of don't go the way I anticipate, it's like, oh, this is great. This is a lesson. You know, what am I looking for here? There's something here for me to learn from me, to make me a better person. And, you know, I don't always say it quite that calmly, but
of course.
but there are moments when you catch yourself and it's like, wait a minute, I didn't anticipate this. What is this teaching me? And always it's a positive. I mean, in my opinion, there are no negatives. So it's like, okay, so what am I taking from this? How am I going to be a better person because of this? And it works out very well. Again, I am called often a Pollyanna, and I claim it, and it's okay. But it's made my life a happier place. So... I wouldn't change it
for
the world.
Well, one of the famous kahunas that I've studied, who lived on the Big Island, he talked about dwelling in the positive polarity or dwelling in the negative polarity. You know, in HUNA, it's so simple because we are organizing things that we are creating the world with our thoughts and our intentions and our beliefs. Then that means that we are focused, and because energy flows where attention goes, we are focusing on what we want, and we are not focusing on what we don't want. And it's really that simple. And it doesn't mean that the doubt won't come up. Oh boy, the doubt will come up. And when the doubt comes up, when you're trying to create the new thing, the doubt comes up, and you say, thank you very much, I see you there, but we're still going this way. We're still going towards that thing that we want. We stay in the positive polarity. And it's not about... It's not Pollyanna. It's more about the I understand why people would say that about you, but it's more about staying in creative energies, and the positive polarity. Love is the way in which we further create, because the whole thing's based on love.
Well, and you used a really important word there, too, and that was creative. And in my philosophy, I believe that creativity is the key to just about everything. And the more you pour creativity into your life and experience it in different aspects, different ways, you're creating a richness around you that is just going to bring joy and love into your heart. And
yeah.
I'm a living testimony to that. You know, there's no way I'm proof that it works. No matter, it's something that, you know, especially when you're a spiritual person, you know, there are times when you just know things and people don't understand why you just know them, but you just do. And that's one of the, I just know this, and, you know, you can't shake me from it, but you do your best, but this is what works for me, and this is, you know, been my focus for a long time now. We did hop ahead to the, I did want to go into the seven principles, so
sure.
We go back to one and,
yeah,
and
we'll
work
go back
our
to
way
one.
Through them.
And just to piggyback on what you just said, you know, people have asked me, you know, what, how do you live a spiritual life? How does one live a spiritual life? And my answer to that is the creative engagement that we have in the moment, that we are creatively engaging with what's happening. That's it. But that we are actually aware of what's coming up on the screen of our awareness, and what are we going to do about it? How are we going to create it further? You know, and that's so much about this work. And it goes back to the first principle. So the first principle is that the world is what you think it is. So not just your experience of the world, but that the world itself is created by your thoughts. So if you think of reality as a screen of awareness, and onto that screen of awareness, we project our thoughts, our beliefs, our history, and that awareness, reality itself, subtly shifts and changes based on what we project on it. So we are all participating, and what is inside our inner world is participating on the projection of what reality is. And because the inner world of so many people has been so negative, has been so mired in greed and separation and fear and isms of all kinds, that reality has literally gotten sick, which is what we've experienced in the last year and a half. And so it's about each of us individually making a choice and knowing that our inner world, our inner world projects onto reality and creates reality. And so we each individually do our part. If we're signed up to be part of the solution, the capital S solution, we do our part without ever leaving our homes of contributing to that collective reality with positivity, love, non-separation, reverence, humility, etc.
Yeah, I've told lots and lots of people that I believe that the time out that the universe gave us gave everyone the opportunity to be more creative within their lives and discover where their true purpose lay. And thousands of people have done that, and it's really quite profound to see the changes in so many people's lives because they took the time to go inside of themselves and to creatively find a new way of expressing and manifesting within their reality. And I don't get me wrong, I know millions of people have died, and I am saddened by that greatly. But at the same time, millions of people have found a new direction for their lives, and there is joy and celebration in that awareness as well.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, as someone with a large private practice, I can tell you that is the experience I've had with every single client in the last year and a half. That if there was something that they were to wake up to, if there was a relationship they were supposed to leave, if there was a career that they were supposed to shift, if there was a job they were supposed to leave, if there was a geography they were supposed to move to, this was the time when they did that. And, you know, and that narrative, because the evolutionary narrative of this time on the planet, you know, when you think of if COVID did indeed come from bats, which they believe it did, bat medicine from a shamanic perspective is about death and rebirth. And while we might not like the death at the end that we're scared of, but I've actually heard it's kind of pleasant, inherent in death is rebirth. And so this has been a very rebirthing time. And so a lot of people are feeling it. And it's not a narrative that you turn on, you turn on the evening news. That's not a narrative we're being presented with. We're just being presented with the scary one. And we're not being presented with the fact that this is for so many people who have incarnated at this time to be a part of the solution, and that they are waking up to that. Even if you look at the younger generations, particularly the millennials and the generation before them, these kids, you know, they've been, by the patriarchy, they've been called lazy and they've been called entitled. But actually, these are people who actually have just looked at what's been handed to them and said, I don't want to do it like you. And these groups of young people are organically ecologically minded. Organically, they came in with that. They incarnated with a sense of ecology. They certainly didn't learn that from their elders. And so there is this this huge population of people that have incarnated at this time. And the Hopi called it the Rainbow Coalition. This time when the big shift would happen. That there would be all of these beings, all of these light workers, so to speak, that would usher in this new way. And this is the time when healers are being born, and healers are really stepping into that, and you know, and all of that. And it's a really beautiful time. But at the same time, there is also a major death of the old ways, and the old ways are just the things that we all know, the illusion of separation, dominion over nature, profits over people, diminished freedoms of any kind. And those are dying out, and it's going kicking and screaming, but they are dying out. And this new population, certainly anyone listening to this broadcast, these are the people that are who have incarnated at this time for a specific purpose, as has been prophesied. The Maya, the Quechua people, the Hopi people, the Hindu people. Talk about the Kali Yuga. Like, there are so many different indigenous traditions that speak about this time on the planet, and that's where we're going. And that's why this. Sorry, I get excited about this stuff. But that's why there's so much esoteric wisdom available now. That's why you can go pick up my book and read a book about Hawaiian spiritual philosophy, because that's by design. And the spiritual intelligences know what they're doing. And they brought all this material out for the masses, because this is the time most when the masses need it.
Absolutely. And to me, it's, you know, I've been confined to my home now for going on 2 years, but I have not felt imprisoned. It feels as though the world is my oyster. And, you know, I creatively, you know, go outside and I talk to the world through the podcast. And, you know, it's like my world expanded with all of this. It didn't constrict, it expanded. And somebody said to someone asked me, you know, your radio show has a strange name, and I said, no, it doesn't. It's Nightlight. And they said, but what does it mean? And I said, it means that this is a place where you can find light. And if it applies to you, take it in and use it for yourself. And if it doesn't, switch channels. But, you know, it provides a beacon of sorts, and the audience that we have just is illustrative of the fact that people are looking for answers now. They're truly seeking understanding and cosmology, and they're seeking a way of finding their own inner truths and expanding upon them. And Nightlight is a place where they can, and that's you know, kind of been, you know, my mission for the last 8 years, and will continue, certainly. But I think that these are times when people can find magic inside of them, and I use that term a lot, but we all have magic inside of us. I compare us to cars that, you know, that have all the whistles and bells and everything, and it's like we were given an avatar, if you will, a body that has all of the bells and whistles of you know, the mastership that is carried within us. And it's just a matter of looking, well, we didn't come with an owner's manual, unfortunately, but seeking for those portals within us that takes us to those magical places. And they're there. They're there in everyone. Everyone is capable of this. And that's what excites me about this time frame. People are actually finally starting to look for those bells and whistles inside of themselves.
Yeah, and they really are there. And one of the things I love about this philosophy is around the power of thought, and that the power of thought is considered a kind of magical tool. The power in Huna, we consider choice to be a magical power. Because if we are using our thoughts, our intentions, our beliefs, our actions to effect creation, if that those are the only tools that we need, our love to effect creation, mm-hmm. then that means that we are indeed capable of magical things. And part of the journey toward wholeness that so many of us are called to follow is about that realization, about the fact that we have forgotten that we are indeed these magical beings capable of really amazing things. And so absolutely, it's so important that people realize that what you're lending your attention to is creating the world. And so you have to pay attention to what you're paying attention to, because what you're paying attention to is creating energetic blueprints that are becoming matter. And this leads us to the second principle. You talked earlier about you've expanded during this time, during COVID, uh-huh. and that really speaks to the second principle, of Huna. So the first is the world is what you think it is, so you create reality with your thoughts. The second principle is that there are no limits. There are no limits. That means that it is a limitless universe. That means that separation is merely an illusion. So you can think of it as one giant organism through which we each individually experience the one giant organism. If that's too esoteric, you can just think that we are all individual waves in the ocean that can't separate ourselves from the ocean. So that means what you heal in yourself, you heal in the all. What you can, cultivate in yourself, you contribute to the all, just by doing your own work. And any way in which you are stuck, or you're mired in low self-esteem, or you're mired in addiction, or whatever it is, and those things happen, they do. We mm-hmm. have to realize that the whole world is stuck with that. Because we are inseparable from that. And it's a beautiful idea, but it really is about taking 100% responsibility for your own healing. My teacher, Serge King, he says, if you want to heal someone, think of them and you feel good. Think of them and you feel good. And what he's getting at is that we are contributing to the one giant organism through our cultivating our own love, our own goodness, our own focus and intentionality. And that's what that principle is getting at. And just like nature, because we talked about that the shaman is emulating nature. What we see in nature is complete interconnectivity. Complete holism, everything working together. And that is if we can know that we are centering, we are each individually centering ourselves in that same oneness. And that's the reason why you can't make a mistake, because everything is working together. There is an order to all of it. Because there's only one giant thing happening, and the entire thing moving towards growth and creation. So that's just a way to think about it. But it really is about you thinking about that you personally contribute to the collective with every action you take, every thought you think. And that's the principle.
It's I love that. I and then of course we have the attention goes where the energy goes where the attention flows, or the other way around.
And Bruce, that's right. Energy flows where attention goes, and also attention flows where energy goes. So you know, if you turn on the spotlight in a room, all the energy will go, or all the attention will go to that. So it works. It works. There's an opposite corollary as well. But yeah, and that's just about placing your just being really careful about where you're placing your focus with consistency, because that is the part of manifestation. See, what happens is that people they want to manifest something, and so maybe they'll do a spell, maybe they'll think about it, and then the doubt will come in, or they'll get busy. And in Huna we say mixed thinking gets mixed results. So you focus on this thing with consistency, and that's what brings it into being.
Yeah, I think
I'll tell you a funny
the
story.
Element
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the element of consistency is the important part, because, you know, it's sort of like sometimes somebody will say, well, I'll light a candle for them and they'll be fine. And then the reality is they'll be finer if you are consistently thinking about them getting better, as opposed to lighting a candle and handing the responsibility over to something else. So
that's right. That's right. You know, I tell a funny story about when I knew that I wanted to move to Maui, and I wasn't sure how to do that. And, you know, it was a huge move. And if you read anything about moving to Hawaii, the first thing you hear is how expensive it is. And for years, literally years, there's a show on HGTV called Hawaii Life. And it's 19 seasons of watching people buy property in Hawaii. And I watched every episode of those 19 seasons like three times. And I would watch people buy property in Hawaii, and I would watch how they would think, and I would watch when they were told what the price of the property was, how that they would smile, and how that they, you know, and I focused on the process of moving to Hawaii, and in that way, because energy flows where attention goes, for years. In fact, even the afterword of my book, before I had moved to Hawaii, I say that one of the last things I say in the book is Hawaii is my destination. And I didn't even know I was being manipulative, because I was making it. I was writing a book where I'm saying that's where I'm ending up, and that's what happened. So it's about that consistent focus with removing the doubt. So if you remove the doubt, it's instant manifestation. But a lot of us can't remove the doubt, you know. But if you can just know that it's there and not give it clout, not give it legitimacy, and refocus.
Important. And I think so many people just, you know, don't put the effort into the focus, which is so important. And it's so much a part of everyday reality of your thoughts. Just, you know, there are many times within a day where people are, I think a lot of technology has gotten in the way of this kind of work, to be honest with you. You know, cell phones constantly, tablets constantly, computers constantly. If you're alone with your thoughts, you can do a lot better work, actually.
It's that, and it's also, I think that I think one of the things that we just struggle with so much in Western culture is this idea of assimilating. Of the need to be like everyone else, to fit in, the what does everyone think of me part of us, and that is and if you think about like what that does, what happens is that that's the goal, to assimilate, and what happens is that people who wake up and go, I'm assimilating and I'm not happy. I'm fitting in. It all looks right. I'm going to the right parties. I have the right bank account, but it doesn't feel right. And they've been following the rules of the collective. And then what happens is they go to a shaman, you know, they go to a healer, and they say, I'm following all these rules. I'm doing everything right, and I'm not happy. And the shaman says, don't follow those rules. I have another set of rules. And my rules say that what's true is only what's true for you. and that you're not to assimilate with everyone else, but you're to follow your own inner directives. You're to follow your own heart. What animates you? And that's very different than assimilating. And so that's a real recalibration that everyone on the spiritual path needs to make, is to stop caring what everyone thinks. Because if you're doing it right, most people won't understand you.
That's true. That's true. I tell people
that's why it's so important to do that.
Yeah,
okay,
people all the time that the universe always provides you with what you need, not necessarily what you want, but what you need is always there and provided for you. And
a lot of people, because they spend so much time assimilating, they haven't actually acknowledged what it is that they want.
Mm-hmm.
They've been given a set of dictates by family, by society about what money is, what men are, what women are, and what work is, and the sort of Protestant idea of work productivity, all of those things that we're born into a collective unconscious with all of these rules and ways of being that are formulaic and that are spoon fed to us. And we're taught if we follow them. And when we turn on television, it tells us how we're supposed to look, how we're supposed to think, what our money's supposed to look like, who we're supposed to like, who we're supposed to look like. And to live a spiritual life is to say, I'm tuned into that enough to know what's going on, but then I follow my own inner directives.
Exactly.
Because your own inner directives, you know, and it's just so important that we do that. So important that we do that. And it's an act of even rebellion in some way, because everyone is so mired in what everyone thinks and fitting in. And ultimately one of the principles that Huna talks about, that truth is a highly subjective thing. The only absolute truth is that everything is. That's the only absolute truth. Everything is.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is just something that someone made up. And so you decide what is true for you, and you follow that. And, you know, I've heard narratives, you know, about the COVID. I've heard narratives that are anti-vaccine, that are anti-COVID, that are all these different. And what I have found is that if you adhere to any narrative with a sense of, I'm adhering to this narrative because it's the right one for me, that you're fine.
Oh yeah.
And if you're the person who, you know, if you're the person who says I'm not getting a vaccine, and that's what you believe, and that's what you know, because the world is what you think it is, then I know the science people are going crazy when I say this. I know that. But what I have found over and over, I know they are. You make them crazy. But what I have found over and over again is that then I have other clients who are very, I want that vaccine. I want to get on with it. That's the right thing for me. And God bless them. That's the right thing for them.
Yeah.
And so much of this time on the planet, and because there are, you know, I mean, I think that the last administration did in a way a great service, because they basically said, truth is up for grabs. Truth is up. we're letting you know the truth is up for grabs. And what that actually helped us with is to decide for ourselves individually what's true for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way to figure that out is we're. What's the thing that's taking you towards growth, creation, and love? That should be your truth.
I agree. Totally. So let's go to four.
Yeah, that's a Hawaiian word called manawa. And that is about the present moment. That is translated as now is the moment of power. So now is the moment of power. So the what you're thinking about, what you're making choices about, remembering that the universe is limitless, remembering that you have the power to elicit energies through what you focus on. You can only do any of that in the present moment. So now is the moment of power, because now is the only place where you can do anything. And now is the only place where you can access power. And so in Hawaiian cosmology, there are no past or future tenses of verbs in the Hawaiian language. Everything only relates to the present moment. So they think of all time existing in the now. So if you go to, from this perspective, from a Huna perspective, if you go to a psychic to get a reading, and the psychic is telling you this is what's going to happen in the future, they're not doing that. No one can do that. What they are doing is they are reading present moment energies that, if unattended to, will lead toward that that future outcome. But it's only about the present moment. And this is also about because there is only the now, you can really let go of the past. You can really start over anytime you want to. You know, we're all carrying around the past, and we're all mired in the shameful things for the mistakes that we made. And it's only in the now that you can go, you know what, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I was actually trying to do something. It just wasn't the best thing to do at the time. And I just need to look at these past actions with compassion, and I need to let them go and to come up to date with myself. And that I don't, in this present moment, I don't owe anyone anything. And it's just about, where am I now? Because who I think I am now is who I am. That's the Huna philosophy. Who I think I am now, that's who I am. And we can start over in any given moment, because this is the only place where we can access power in the present moment.
Absolutely. And you know, if most people adhered to that philosophy, I think it would be a happier world for sure.
Yeah. You know, if two people are together in a room and they are free of future fears and past regrets, they'll become friends.
Yes, perfect sense.
Yeah, the now is a very, very friendly place. It's what we do to the now. And even if you think about memory, because we talk a lot about memory in the Huna philosophy. You know, where is it? It doesn't exist anywhere. Things exist as a memory. Where is the past? It's nowhere.
Yeah,
and that means that we can actually reinterpret and reframe and recreate the past right now. So if you had a major betrayal in your life, you can look at that as, I have this major betrayal in my life and I'm supposed to be sad about it for the rest of my life. Or you could, in the present moment, decide that major betrayal was the light bulb that made me go never again. And I see all the things that led to that betrayal. And right now I'm making the choice where I'm seeing that as the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me. Difficult as it might be to get there. And you can only do that right now.
And it is. It truly is. And yet, you know, there have been lots of times when somebody is, said to me, you know, what would you change in your past? And my response is always absolutely nothing, because it made me the person I am today, and I really like me. So.
Yeah, and people get, there's needless suffering over the idea that I should have known what I didn't know.
Yeah.
I hear this all the time, that if I had only known, well, you didn't know, so stop it.
Yeah.
See, that, you know, and it's so important that we give ourselves, cut ourselves that slack. Serge King talks about blanket forgiveness. You just forgive it all. You just forgive it all and start over in the present moment. Yeah.
Great advice. And you know,
beautiful.
You make it sound simple, and for many it is a difficult journey, but it's one that's worth traveling, because it does give you a sense of power and a sense of direction and a sense of being able to take charge of your life at this point in time, instead of, you know, continuing to be influenced by things that you had no control over and you carry them as a weight, which you don't have to do.
That's right. You know, shamanic healing is, and shamanic philosophy is simple, but it's not necessarily easy. And I do want to emphasize that because it can be very hard. You have to be really ready to forgive yourself, you know, or to forgive another. You have to actually work at, if you want to, you know, have your thoughts align with a positive polarity, and you have an entrenched pattern of negativity that comes from how you were treated as a child, that
uh-huh.
that is so old that your negative outlook feels almost spiritually true. That takes work. That takes work to get out of that. That takes healing to get out of that. You know, so you know, I talk about the ideals, but the work is, wow, this belief about myself, I'm aware of it. It's not very nice. And right now it's not going anywhere. I'm stuck with this one right now. And I got to keep working on that one. And that's part of the path of healing. And there's nothing else worth doing. There's absolutely nothing else worth doing. Yeah.
And everyone has things that they, you know, that it's appropriate to review and to let go of and to heal and to, you know, give themselves a greater power to move forward in time. But going back and taking a look at this stuff is a very good idea, and it does give you wisdom on many new levels, because you have, you know, time and accumulated wisdom in that time to be able to see the fact that in many cases, in most cases, you had no control. You were doing something that
that's
you
right.
learned from it, and that's important.
And it's so important that we know that. One of the things that we work on a lot, and it's a major part of the Ho'oponopono that I teach, the healing practice that I teach, is really around that what our earliest experiences are in life, how we were treated, how society treated us, if we were the object of certainly abuse or neglect, but also just indifference, misunderstanding,
mm-hmm.
even a sense that we're different, we personalize that and create a sense of self and a way of seeing ourselves in relationship to the world based on some of that stuff. I remember working with a 70-year-old woman, and she recalled a look of self-consciousness from an ashamed father at something she did when she was six. A look.
Oh, my gosh.
And she registered the look. And she remembered thinking it was in his disdain, in his judgment of me, that I formed a sense of self. And at 70, she was still working on it. And she could only trace it back to a look. And, like, that's how susceptible we are. And so that's why, we, you know, when I talk glibly about aligning with the positive polarity, yes, that's great. But we may very well have entrenched patterns that say, that's not my world. That's not me in relationship to the world. And if you have that, you have work to do. Because you
mm-hmm.
have there are aspects of you that are in that have learned a mistake, because we are all a spark of divinity, we are all a spark of it, because there are no limits, which means that we're all part of the one universe. That means we're all part of the one God. And so if we have learned something about ourselves that is antithetical to our best interest, that causes us to block ourselves from our moving toward our growth and creation, we have learned a mistake, and it's we have forgotten our divinity. What do I mean, divinity? Perfect, whole, deserving, lovable. We come in with that, and then we forget
mm-hmm.
it. And so aligning your mind. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's one of the saddest things about coming into this plane, this dimension, into physicality, is the fact that we are perfect and that we are divine, and that almost immediately the culture works at, you know, making us forget that.
That's right. You know, and it's also, I'm not gonna badmouth organized religion, except I will say this. If you think of the major Abrahamic religions, so there's
mm-hmm.
this off-planet God, usually a male, has good days and bad days, and judges,
mm-hmm.
and which essentially, and whether or not you follow that paradigm or not, what we all learn is that the authority, that authority lives outside of us, and that we are to be judged, and that we are to earn our keep, and that there may be a time after we die where we actually are free, but we're not now. And that paradigm keeps us enslaved, not only spiritually, but economically, politically, et cetera. And so it's so important that we look at that for ourselves, that we reclaim our own individual authority over ourselves as in alignment with the divine consciousness that resides in each of us.
Absolutely.
And that's a big thing. It's a big thing to hold on. It's a big thing to own for yourself.
Oh gosh, yeah. And
yeah.
And it's something to work on constantly. And the reality is that you know, happily, sometimes the older you get, the more wisdom you gather, and the more you begin to be cognizant of the fact that there is the power within you and the connection to the divine, and you have that aspect, that seed of the divine within you, and it's there to use and connect with, if only you reach for it.
Yeah. You know, we're not going in order, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. That the principles don't necessarily have to be in order. But this speaks to the sixth principle, which is mana. And that Hawaiian word is translated as all power comes from within. So that means in an infinitely powerful universe, that powerful infinitude converges at the point that you call you. That means I have all the power and you have all the power. And one of the translations of the word mana, which is where this principle comes from, is authority. When you think about authority, there's that word author in there. And so our inner authority is about the ability to author our own lives. And that the authority does not ever live outside of us. And
exactly.
And our power does not live outside of us. Even if you think of the nature of power, power over something will only lead to retaliation and fear, right? Power against will only lead to resistance. But the power to empower, that's how we know we have the power, because we can give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that resides in us. That's how we know that it's in us. So to not withhold from the world, but to come from a place of wanting to empower the other is the only indication that you know that you have the power. And so it really turns this idea of what does everyone think of me, and someone else has the clever ideas about who I'm supposed to be and what life is supposed to be, and those things are outside of me. And it turns that on its head, and it says, no, that comes from you. That's for you to decide.
Uh-huh.
And it's, a big thing to hold, because, and it's also saying someone who doesn't agree, they have the power to have that perspective. Everyone has all the power.
As relates to them, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's knowing that you have it inside of you, and it's a matter. I don't understand why more people don't embrace this philosophy, because it makes such perfect sense.
Well, because let me say this, you know, healing and resistance. What I have found over the years, I've done this for so many years now, they're two sides of the same coin. Why the resistance? Because that means you'd have to actually take responsibility for your gifts. That means you'd have to leave that relationship. That means you'd have to change. That means you'd have to show up for yourself. That means you would have to feel the discomfort of, can I really do this? I don't know that I can, but I'm going to put myself out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many reasons why people don't claim their own power. Financial reasons in particular, because that is to risk, to put yourself out there is to risk, and people are risk averse, and so that's a big reason why. And just to say, you know, so often people think, oh, if I follow this, then I don't have to be scared. No, you have to be scared. The only way to know that you're following your soul's path is to follow the risks. Follow the things that say, oh, if you're going to go from here to there, you're going to need faith. Are you up for it? That's the soul's path. That's how you know you're on it.
But there's also a joyful part of it, too. Yes, there's, you know, the fear is there, too. But I have found that people who are truly on their path have a great deal of joy inside of them. They have enthusiasm. They have joy. They have celebration. And yes, they have difficult times, but they still have joy and celebration. And I think that's one of the ways that I kind of spot check myself from time to time, you know. Is this still a celebration? Yes, it is. Okay, you're going the right way. Do you know where you're going? Absolutely not, but I'm going to have a good time going. So.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, let me say we skipped over the principle before mana, which is aloha. And aloha is not only about love, but it's about happiness. It's about celebration. So aloha is translated as to share life with another, to become face-to-face and share life with another. And in the sharing of life is happiness. And so aloha is considered the only ethic, the only rule that we adhere to. Is what we are doing ultimately bringing us happiness? Is love's perspective present in this thought, in this belief, in this intention? Is love's perspective present? And so yes, but and sometimes you have to feel risk and fear to actually get there, you know, to get to the celebration. But that's always the goal. You know, if you think about that the energy of nature, if you think of nature, nature just wants to keep experiencing itself. It just wants to keep going and growing. And anything that wants to keep going and growing, there's got to be an intentionality underneath that. And the only thing I can think of that wants to experience more of itself is love.
Yes.
And so aloha is essentially the organizing principle of the planet and a foundational principle to how to think like a shaman. Because essentially every action that we take, every thought that we think, every present moment that we engage in, we are looking for where's the love.
And I have found that you know, truly unconditional love doesn't need the reciprocity. It just needs the experience of itself. Now, that's unconditional love. That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I think that certainly a lot of people who would be listening to this podcast, I think that they're already so good. You know, these are all, you know, anyone who's listening to this, these are people who want to be better in the world. They want to contribute. They want to, like, you know, they want to be good. And I think, you know, I read about the too good person. And what I mean by that is the person who shows up in love and doesn't expect anything in return. And while unconditional love is certainly lovely, it can't be a way of life because then you're going to give from depletion. You're going to give from lack. So one of the things that Serge told me about aloha, he said, if aloha is given and not returned, there is no further obligation to give it. So we are really looking for reciprocity in our relationships, that our output of love is equal to our input. And that's the translation of that word aloha. It's about sharing. It's about the sharing of love that creates happiness. And so it's important that we look at that as well, because I think sometimes people just strive to be good and they can forget themselves.
Oh,
does that
make
sense? Yeah.
Definitely. So what did we skip?
I think we got the last one is the last principle is a word called pono. And pono, the translation of this principle is that effectiveness is the measure of truth. Effectiveness is the measure of truth. So that truth is only about what works. And if it doesn't work, it's not true. And I love this principle because it's saying there's no right way to do anything. You're only looking for the one that works. And it invites in creativity and invites in the idea that if for whatever reason, whatever you're working on is not coming to fruition, just go back in those principles again. Remember that you create the world with your thoughts. The world is what you think it is. That's the first principle. Remember that you are connected to everything, that there are no limits, which means that there is a solution to every problem. That's the second principle. You remember that where you place your focus and attention invite in energies that bring about change and creation. That's the third principle. Energy flows where attention goes. You remember that it's only in the present moment where you can do anything. So get in it. You remember to include love's, that's the fourth principle. You remember to include love's perspective, aloha, that's the fifth principle. You remember that you have all the power within you to do whatever it is that you want. You have all the power and so does everyone else. That's the sixth principle, all power comes from within. And then the last principle says, if you've done all that and it still doesn't work, you get to try something else.
And, you know, that's a lot of steps to go through. So I think that, you know, by the time you get to the seventh principle, it makes a great deal of sense. You know, I've tried all the channels.
What I love about that principle is that it's really saying, you know, particularly people who follow, follow spiritual teachers or spiritual paths, you know, there's such a sense of, am I doing it right? You know, or you're learning a meditation technique and am I doing it right? Am I a good student? And that last principle is really saying it only has to do with whether or not it's effective. My HUNA teacher says, if it works, it's HUNA. If it works, it's HUNA. And so he would include anything in the HUNA philosophy as long as it's effective. And effectiveness is the goal. Because what's the point of any esoteric or rarefied wisdom unless it's actually going to affect our lives, you know? And so, and I also love that this principle is included because it's also saying all of these things that we're talking about, awareness in the present moment and love and inner power and harnessing your thoughts, these things actually do work. And they work so much that we're actually going to say, if they don't work for you, throw them out. That's how confident we are that they work.
I like that. I really do like that. In your book, you talk about the three parts of the self.
Which I found
fascinating.
Yeah. So, Freud and Jung, they had three aspects of self as well. The contemporary psychological models do. But many, many, many indigenous cultures talk about three different aspects of self. And they're essentially the physical body, the body mind, the conscious mind, so the thinking mind, the one that makes choices. And then there's this kind of higher self, this thing that seems to come online when we're inspired. And so in general, if you think of that the conscious mind, the one that is showing up to this call, that's listening to this, that made whatever choices you needed to make to get on this call, the conscious mind, even more than the high mind, is in charge. Because the conscious mind is the one that can actually think the right thoughts, create the right beliefs, show up in the right way and all that. That's the conscious mind's job. And the unconscious mind is the part of us certainly the parts of us that run our body, beat our hearts, all of those things. You think of the unconscious mind as that which has memorized things, either genetic memory, so the memory to beat your heart and to keep you alive. But the problem with the unconscious mind is the learned memory. Because we may have learned things, and we're back to those entrenched patterns, those entrenched beliefs. We may have learned things about ourselves that if they are not unlearned, they are antithetical to our best interest. You can even think of the unconscious mind almost like a computer program with very specific software implanted in there. And if the software isn't going to get you where you want to go, you got to change the software. And so the conscious mind is another way to think of the conscious mind is a kind of new parent, a new loving parent that says to the inner child, you have memorized these mistakes about yourself. You don't look right, that you'll never have enough money, that you're not smart enough, that you'll end up alone, that you're unlovable, whatever those things are. And the conscious mind is the one that decides and reparents this child self. This is the essence of Ho'oponopono. And the high self then brings about and inspires us toward doing that. And when we align with love and we align with our own healing, meaning our conscious mind sends love, sends healing to our body, to our to the parts of us that hold the memory, the high mind comes online and says, oh, there's healing happening down there, and sends grace, sends love, sends healing. So you think of the three selves, the high mind, the conscious mind, and the unconscious mind aligning when the conscious mind makes the choice to love, to send love to those hurt parts of us. And when we do that, that's what brings all three selves online. And that's the essence of Ho'oponopono. That forgiveness process is about healing those parts of us that are entrenched in the unconscious, that are antithetical to our best interest, that won't allow us, internal beliefs that won't allow us to hold who we actually need to become. Does that make sense?
It makes great sense, and your three phrases that I picked up on and I just thought were fabulous was, I love you, please forgive me, and thank you.
Yeah, there's one more, I'm sorry. So I'll just break them down because there's so much misinformation about this practice. So
okay.
So in Ho'oponopono, we use four phrases. And so the conscious mind, the new loving parent, sees the child who has a mistaken identity about themselves, at least about some subject matter, a mistaken belief, a low self-esteem, I'm unlovable, I'm unworthy, or I can only soothe myself with food, or I need to be in this addiction, or whatever it is. And the conscious mind uses four phrases to speak to and connect with this hurt child. I love you, so I'm the new parent in charge, and I'm telling you that was then and this is now, but I love you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry is another way to think of I'm sorry is I actually see you. I see your suffering. And I'm sorry that you feel that way. See, it's only in the naming of a problem that we have the freedom to fix it. And I'm sorry is about naming the problem. You're actually hurt. You're actually hurt. This happened to you. You feel badly about yourself. And it's a very powerful thing to just name it. And the I'm sorry is I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you feel that way about yourself. And then please forgive me is please forgive me for all the times previously where I let you believe that about yourself, where I even invited in people who would help you believe that about yourself, for all the ways in which I didn't take care of you, for all the ways in which I didn't talk you out of this misbelief. Please forgive me, because I'm the new parent now, and I want you to get on board with this new way of thinking. And thank you is to say to this child, thank you for this mistaken adaptation, this mistaken belief, and thank you for going along with me now. And thank you for aligning with my view of you, my I love you view of you. So I love you. I'm sorry because I see you. Please forgive me for all the times when I didn't take care of you. And thank you for going along with me now, for letting this memorized idea of something about yourself that is antithetical to your best interest, thank you for letting that go. And that's the process of Ho'oponopono.
And it's a self-healing, too. I mean, I think what people have to understand is that you do not wave a wand and make something happen. You lead a person through this self-awareness and this healing process.
That's right. And it's not just once. it's not just once, because these patterns held in the unconscious mind, you know, they don't go away after one time. They're about, you know, one of my Hawaiian teachers talks about incessant ho'oponopono, meaning that if you're doing it right, you're doing it all the time. You're not necessarily saying the phrases, but the idea is that there is this part of you that has to relearn something that it may have learned when it was four. And so it's not going to get it after one time. It's going to have to be shown and told and I love you'd and you know, many times before it really starts to let go. And that's the work. That's the work. That's the healing work.
It's sort of like a stream that is flowing in one direction, and that in order to change the direction or the bed of the stream, you have to start to carve another channel, and it's over and over and over until the water begins to flow in the new channel and let go of the old channel.
I love that. That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. And it's just that because the habits of thought, the habits of belief are so old, it really does take this, as you said, I love that metaphor, this sort of recarving, that we're going in this direction now. And I know that you think that you're unlovable. I know that you think you're unworthy. I know that you think you're untalented. I know you think you don't look right. I know you think you're going to end up alone. I know you think you're never going to have money. But I'm going to guide you toward a new belief, and I'm going to do it over and over and over again with love so you can let this go. Because the reason why you even have that misbelief is because love was withheld. Love is withheld from you. That's why you have a belief in there where you can't find any love in it. So we're going to give love to this problem in order to let it go. And
what a freeing experience for someone to go through. Because, you know, we all have those little pieces here and there that have to be worked on. If we were perfect, we wouldn't be here. There would be no point in incarnating. So, you know, there's always something to work on.
Well, and if you think about it this way, if you think of when you think about the high self, or even you think of spirit beings, the easiest way to understand spirit or the divine or God or the energies is just that there are loving beings hovering around the planet who have so graduated, who are so wise, and they just want to help. They just hover around the planet and they wait to help. And what do they help? Anyone who's moving toward love. If you're not moving toward love, they're just quiet because they can't do much with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are actively moving toward love, you elicit all kinds of help. And so the idea of doing a practice like Ho'oponopono to extend love to yourself is to invite the divine love, spiritual love, to invite it to come to you, and it will. And that's a fundamental difference in shamanic cosmology. In shamanism, we don't reach toward the divine. We act love. We intend love. We believe love down here. And the divine comes to us. Because when we do that, we are in harmonic resonance with the divine love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's opening a portal to that. It's unlocking a door that we have the key to.
That's right. You know, if you think of, let's say, it's just an example. Let's say you are, I had this woman a lot when I lived in New York. So let's say you're a woman, 35 years old, and you learned from mom a long time ago that if you're 35 and you're single, that's it. It's over with for you. You're not going to, and that is a belief that you have. And you are pretty sure that it's over for you and that all women over 35 end up alone. And if that is a belief that you hold, then as much as the spiritual intelligences would love to drop the guy right next to you on the subway, the spiritual intelligences can't work around a belief where you wouldn't be looking for the guy because you have a belief that says that can't happen. So that belief that you have created blocks love. And the spiritual love can't do anything can't override that. And that's why it's so important to tend to what you're thinking, because the world is what you think it is, and the spiritual intelligences can only work with you based on what you are willing to receive, based on what you believe is possible for you. And that's why to give yourself love, self-love is the thing that invites in spirit to do its thing. So there's a word in Hawaiian called aloha ma, and the aloha ma means self-reflective love. And those mu beings that I talked about, those otherworldly spiritual beings from the stars, in some way infected the highest ideal of love. And what they put into the water was this aloha ma, that the highest ideal that we could come to is a self-reflective love. Because if you can produce that or create that in yourself, that aligns you with divinity. That aligns you with the big love. And who does that? Your conscious mind.
Well, and we stop
in the present
about
moment.
Love is like a magnet, you know, and if you are...
Love is like a magnet, yep.
Yeah, if you are radiating it, then you are attracting it to you. It's that simple.
That's right. That's right.
It's a lot harder to do, but it's the philosophy is there.
That's right. There's a practice that is about building your aloha, and the practice is so simple. It's so simple, but it's so deep, and it's called blessing. And so what happens when you are practicing aloha, when you're blessing, is that when there's something that you come across that you want, but that you don't have, someone who's got the job you want, someone who's got the amount of money that you want, someone who's got the body that you admire, someone who is successful in some way, that rather than other yourself from that thing that has the thing that you want, you bless them. And so whatever it is that you want, if you want more money, you bless people with money, and you bless everything that money created. And if you want better health, you bless everything that's healthy. And if you want a success as a film producer, you bless the film producers who are where you're supposed to be. And what that does is that aligns you with the same energy as the thing that you want. And if you're not blessing, if you're withholding and you're being jealous and you're othering yourself from that, you're saying, I'm not that. But when you bless, you actually are in the energetic. That's why love just brings you toward that thing. So we consider that a magical practice to bless what you want. It's so simple, but it's so deep because it's aligning you energetically with those things. And when you don't bless, you are actually othering yourself from those things that you want.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. And your book is, of course, amazing and worthy of being read two or three times before you get all of the good stuff out of it. I was so blown away with it. I just don't understand why this concept is not more powerfully at work within our reality, because certainly it has the antiquity. And it has the perfection of it is so obvious, and
I have to say, Barbara. Yeah, I have to say, you know, it's not about my book. You know, it's about this philosophy. This If you work this with discipline, this works. It really works. But the discipline is part of it. And you know, I wish that there was a better word. Discipline gets a gets a bad rap, you know. But it really is about tending to your thoughts. It really is about always moving toward expecting the best. Everything's working out perfectly, moving in that direction, healing the parts of you that just can't believe it, you know, and it really, really does work. And you know, I taught this material, the material from my book in classes, and this is such an odd experience, but I've had someone say at the end of the day or the end of the 2 days when I've taught the class, they said, why don't they teach this in schools? I've heard that every single time that I've taught. And it's just because it is so kind and it is so about working with energy, which we know is there. And it's so about that thoughts are things that create. And we know that. But it's about actually harnessing that. We know that love heals. We know that you can only do everything in the present moment. We know that the ability to create your life can come only from and through you. And we know that there are a million ways to do anything. And yet we don't actually align with those ideas enough to make them work for us.
Well,
because we're either cynical or scared, you know.
Well, and also I think one of the main reasons why it probably hasn't spread is that because the work has to be done by the individual, and most people want somebody else to do it for them.
Yeah. It's really true. It's really, you know, it's so funny when I remember the last time I taught this material, I said, I taught about Hawaii and some stuff, and I said, okay, I'm going to teach you the seven principles. Now, before I teach you this material, let me just tell you all right now, you're not going to do it. And of course, they all looked at me like, you know, and I said, I'm saying that to you because this is going to be the part that this is going to be with the rubber where the rubber meets the road, because you're going to hear this stuff. And you're going to be inspired, and it's going to resonate with you because it's basic. It's kind of a basic truth that resonates so deeply that most people just understand it. But it's about working that program, and it's about real allowing yourself to risk wanting, to actually risk wanting and going after what you want, to actually allowing yourself to yearn for what it is that you want. And you know, when you think of vulnerability, to live a spiritual life is to be vulnerable, to want something, to want something for yourself that isn't currently there. That's so vulnerable. To pray, it's so vulnerable. To open yourself to creating something or to bringing something in your life that would really mean something to you, it's so vulnerable. And it's so important that we open ourselves to that, and we allow ourselves to want. And in the wanting and in the yearning is the risk. And if you allow yourself to risk, then you invite in the idea that in order to get through this risk, I have to have faith. And now you're on your soul's path.
Yes. No, there have been times in my life where I have known something works to the point where I would bet the ranch on it even though I don't have one, and have found so many times saying to somebody, this works, practice it, work with it, it works, it will get you where you want to go, this works, and see them look at whatever it is I'm suggesting, and I can almost see their thoughts, nah, that won't work. or I'm not about to take the chance to put the effort into it. I think when the individual has to put the effort into it, where they have to commit themselves to work on themselves and make something happen for themselves, that's where people lose the faith. And faith is so important, and you mentioned faith. Having faith that if I do this, that something magical will happen in my life. Not always knowing what it is, but knowing that magic is on its way to you because you have the faith that it's going. It's like Tinkerbell. If in Peter Pan, it's exactly the same thing. If you believe, it happens.
Well, more likely than not, it really does. And then it really does. You know, let me say this too. You know, we're talking a lot about manifesting for yourself and working on yourself and all of that, and that can feel a little solipsistic. That can feel a little selfish. So let me say this too. The purpose of allowing yourself to yearn, to allowing yourself to want, and to going after that, to actually creating an abundant, full life, is ultimately an altruistic act for all beings. Because when you actually get some healing, when you actually come into abundance, when you actually feel fullness, what happens is the inevitable organic response is to pay that forward to the world.
Yes.
And so it's so important that people recognize that it's about getting yourself so full that you can't help but. And the inevitable response will be that you will want, the minute that you, when the divine's hand touches you, when you actually work with principles and manifest something into being, the inevitable response, the organic response, is to tell everyone how you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's so important that we remember that this is about paying our good fortune forward. And that's why we're doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean, our personal responsibility this lifetime, this journey on the earth plane, this lifetime, is to learn to grow, to heal ourselves. And in that healing, there is an overflow which touches other people as well. But then you're giving from excess rather than draining your own physicality. It's a thing with mediums. When I talk to them a lot, and you know, I've done mediumship work too, and when I am always charged by it, and people have said, but I'm so drained when I do it, and it's like, well, then you're using your own physical energy as opposed to channeling universal energy or cosmic energy or the energy of the divine. And if you are bringing that other energy through you, you just get charged up the wazoo. Literally.
Sure.
And it's look at where the source from which you are drawing, which is so important. And this work is, if you're bringing the divine aspect of love through you and it's enriching your life, of course it will spill over to the people around you. And hopefully they'll ask how you did it, you know, and then you can tell.
That's right. You know, if you think of, you know, why was shamanism developed? I mean, shamanism is an embodied path. It's not an ascendant one. There are ascendant or transcendent aspects, but it's about being in a body. And if you think about why was shamanism developed? To find food and medicine, to figure out how to live well, how to heal, how to manipulate the weather to meet needs. You know, it's about living well in a body, and also to experience the pleasures of the earth in a body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you think of what healed actually is, you know, someone asked me once, what does healed look like? What do you mean healed? And I said, healed is when you have set up your life in such a way that you're enjoying the moment most of the time. And that is just about being on this earth and allowing yourself all the sensual pleasures of the earth. And doing whatever once you've experienced that for yourself, and helping others do that as well. And the divine intelligences only want to help us do that. And the more that we do that, the more godlike we actually become.
Yeah, it is an amazing experience. I have a sister who is a shaman, and in the Peruvian tradition, and it's amazing the peace that she has within her because of the work that she has done. And you know, I love the fact that, I mean, there are, you can teach shamanism, but to actually become one, it is a title bestowed on you. It's not one you claim yourself, which I love that too. I mean, my sister would never call herself a shaman.
Me neither. I call myself a shamanic practitioner. Yeah, and I think that there's, you know, there's a cultural piece to it too, and that I think is just important to honor, speaking of that, I do think that's important to talk about. You know, there is a lot of talk about, particularly in contemporary shamanism, about cultural appropriation, and you know, and I'm a Caucasian person, having written a book on the Hawaiian shamanism, although I really do try to universalize it, but it's still that perspective. And, yeah. You know, I can only say that I think it's important that we remember that second principle, there are no limits, which means that everything is connected. And really, there is only one mind. And the reason why, as we talked about the seven principles, the reason why they resonate with you individually, even if you haven't heard them, is because truth is truth. Universal truth is universal truth. You feel it. And we're wired to feel truth, you know. And so I think it's important to remember also that as much as I'm very sensitive, in fact, I even some of the proceeds of my book go to the Hawaii Wildlife Fund. So I wanted to certainly cover my bases in terms of cultural appropriation. But that said, I think it's important to remember, too, that we kind of don't have time. All of this indigenous, this wisdom, all this esoteric wisdom, this is only within the last 50 years that it's even become available to the masses. And 50 years is probably a little long. And we have to assume that the spiritual intelligences of the universe know what they're doing. That we all have, you know, something like Hawaiian shamanism, or even something a Buddhist philosophy. That would be a rarefied thing that you could even find if you go back 75 years. And now it's on the internet, you know. And I think and I think it's so important to acknowledge that maybe that's by design. And the fact is that we need the Hawaiians. The Hawaiians don't need us, you know. And, you know, mm-hmm. we need the Peruvians. The Peruvians don't need us. And I've never had the experience in working with, in working all the different shamans that I have. I've never had the experience where they taught me something and they said, make sure that you tell everyone that I taught you this, or don't teach this to anyone. I've never experienced that. I just experienced a sense of, you're here. This is true. My intentionality is to heal. I don't care what you do with it, but do something good with it and try to get it right. You know, that's the only thing I've ever heard. You know, so I think it's just important because I know that that's a sensitive thing, for some listeners. And again, I am very sensitive to it, but I also had the realization when I came across this wisdom that it felt like it's too good not to share. It's just too good not to share, and that's why I sort of had to, you know.
And you have also, I love the fact that you've got all the Reiki work and even the Cherokee body work that you've been certified in. I mean, it's not like, you know, you decided I'm going to be a shaman and yada yada, but It's what is it? You know the how do they put it? You know the tree by the fruits that they bear, and obviously, you know, you're bearing wonderful fruits because, you know, you obviously have come from some wonderful trees. And it just is, it's, I think that true people on a true spiritual pathway never intended to do it. They just turned up there and they look back and it's like, holy mackerel, look at everything I did. It just fell into place unbelievably and here I am.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting too, because, you know, I have, you know, I've had so much schooling and so much study, and, you know, something like Reiki is the same thing in different traditions. There's a version of quote unquote Reiki in the Huna tradition. They just call it something else. The chakras, there are energy centers that are universal that every culture that I have worked with, they all agree on, but they call them something different.
Absolutely.
Cherokee bodywork is so much about like dialoguing with the body, about actually that each part of the body is conscious. And there are I learned the same thing in Huna, you know, so it's really pointing toward you know, there's nothing new under the sun, you know,
and
all in terms of healing, all roads are leading to Rome, you know, and that's very true.
Well, you have a wonderful, when dealing with the chakras and stuff, you had your you spoke about casting stones, and I've done gem casting for the last 50 years where, you know, people took a handful and they cast the stones, and I gave them information from it. I loved what you had, and, of course, I've done the chakra work too. So, no matter what the modality, you know, there is similarity between all of them, which I find just fascinating. And the more I read and the more I learn, the more I realize that in many ways things have come through us, come to us and through us from the universe in all different places and ways. I did a deck of cards called the Cosmic Deck of Initiation and found that the same patterns had been channeled in other places, and then they turn up in crop circles as well. So that there is definitely an energetic out there trying to give us information and putting it through as many different modalities as they can possibly do, so that at some point we put it all together and we have one of those great aha moments and everything falls into place.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be
that's
this
right.
week,
that's right.
But, you know.
No, but that's absolutely right. And that's absolutely right. And I feel that universality too in so many different things. And, you know, and let me say this, just to go back to the Hawaiian thing, the Hawaiian paradigm for a moment. The one thing that if there's a takeaway for the listeners in terms of healing, if you can just remember this paradigm of that your child memorized something that's mistaken, meaning your inner child memorized something about yourself that is a mistake. Some part of you that says no to yourself, that says no to your growth on some level. And if you actually know, and that mistake came about because in some way, fault or no fault, who knows, who cares, love was withheld. And if you simply give that part of you love by simply, just as you would a child, where if the child says, I'm ugly, and you say, of course you're not. And the child says, it's not my world, and you say, of course it is. And if you just give that love to the child, that sets up an entire cosmology of healing and inviting spirit into your life that not only heals the mistake, that heals this mistaken memory, but that actually bring you on your path. And that paradigm of just this part of you that's little, that learned something that's a mistake, and you guide it lovingly towards not believing that anymore. As simple as that is, the keys to the kingdom in terms of healing. That is the keys to the kingdom in terms of getting on your spiritual path and getting rid of those things, letting go of those things that block you from getting on your spiritual path. Just that simple. So that's really my invitation to everyone. Certainly get my book, The Shaman's Mind, Who Knows Wisdom Will Change Your Life. But if you just remember, if you just look at a picture of yourself when you were little, tune into a memory. You don't even have to go into a big traumatic or just tune into that child. Tune into what that child was learning about him or herself, learning about who they are in relationship to life and what they may have learned that is still operative now, that blocks you from your growth. And just in that recognition, you'll begin the process of healing it.
Absolutely. And you know, it's, I mean, you're in Hawaii. If people, now I know your website is www.jonathanhammond.com.
Yep.
Are you available for sessions and things like that via Zoom or whatever, or Skype?
Yeah, because I'm in Hawaii, I have some local clients here, but almost my entire practice is now virtual. I'm seeing people. I see people from Europe, from the mainland, from all over. So yeah, jonathanhammond.com or mindbodyspiritmaui.com. Or if you just Google Jonathan Hammond, it won't be hard to find me. There's a lot of stuff online. But yeah, I definitely see people privately for sure. I do a lot of also supervision or mentoring either healers or people who are becoming healers. And so we actually, we will work on actually speaking about what you're experiencing with your clients. You know, and, mm-hmm. and your professional development, that's something else that that I do a lot as well. And, you know, even though I live on Maui and you know, wrote a book about Hawaiian spirituality, it's very much, you know, I allow people to know that that's the philosophy that I'm practicing if it's effective. You know, I don't necessarily, you know, most people who come to me, they just want to get better. And they don't care where I'm getting the information, you know. And so sometimes I, you know, will be really forthcoming about that this comes from, you know, the Huna philosophy. And sometimes I just bring about the healing or bring about the help that's needed. So it's very universal work that I do, even though it's all informed by the Hawaiian. That's not I don't lead from there because I don't know that that's as helpful to the people that I'm actually working with.
Amazing. And you're also an interfaith minister. Where were you ordained or in what?
Yeah, I was. That was interfaith minister. That was, I did a 2-year seminary program. I mean, it's got to be, oh my God, 20 years, at least 20 years. And interfaith simply means that during the seminary, we looked at all the faith traditions, all the major faith traditions, mm-hmm. You know, Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, 12-step, shamanism, Hinduism, all of it. And it was about finding the universality in all of them, you know, and one of the reasons why I wanted to translate the Hawaiian teachings is just because my brain really operates from this place of finding the one spirit in finding that universality in different faith traditions. And, mm-hmm. I love that. I love it makes people who are purists crazy. because I tend to cross reference and cross correlate all the time, but that's just how my brain works. And and I love finding those similarities. So yeah, that was many years ago. But yeah, that seminary says it's a wonderful program. One Spirit Learning Alliance. Yeah, that's
okay.
In New York City, and they have a whole online. You do the whole program online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did something similar, and I found the thing that was most exciting to me was the reading list. And
Sure.
They're amazing programs. I was ordained in the priesthood of Melchizedek, too, so...
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's cool, too. There's something about going through a program that gives you the material to expand your own understanding of spirit and how it's expressed in different traditions and different places and different ways, and it makes it all the more rich for you for me as a person, hopefully for everybody, that you see the truth in everything, and you understand that everything, actually all major religions were all founded on the Golden Rule, so that, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and where they
That's
went
right.
with it, you
sure.
know, beyond that, so that there is a foundational stone, so to speak, with everything, even the Native Americans, even antiquity. It's you know, it's kindness and it's love. And unfortunately, so many of them have gone their own way and you know, become corporations. And somehow the spirit just isn't as rich in them as it was when they were founded. But
sure.
you know, it's important to find your source wherever it is, and find the source within yourself and connect to it, because it makes life so much richer. I just noticed we're almost out of time. I so thank you for being here and sharing your information with us. This has been a profound time for me. And
thank you so
others.
Much. Mahalo. It's been so wonderful to be here. Thank you so much. And everyone, I wish you all aloha ma, self-reflective love, and that you spend your lives moving toward that. And if this hour or my book, a couple hours in my book, are helpful in some way, then that's wonderful, and I wrote it for you. But I wish everyone just the highest blessings.
Well, I am hopeful, very very hopeful that people have listened and have taken notes, and if not, of course, this will be on YouTube and it'll be on Rumble and all over the place. So you can always find it and listen to it again, because I mean, there's such magic in everything you do here, and it's kind of important that people understand that the source of the information is out there and available. All you need to do is reach for it and start to absorb it and start to practice it, and magic will happen in your life, which is what I think is so magical. I love that part of it. And you know, when magic starts to happen, you know, understand where it's coming from. It has to come through you. And it does. So, Jonathan, thank you so much. I so appreciate your taking your time. And see, you thought 2 hours was a long time, huh?
yeah, right? There it goes.
Yeah.
Well, many blessings. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much again. And everybody, thank you for being here tonight, for joining us. Please check out the YouTube channel, BarbaraDeLong.com, and my website. And Jonathan can be found at JonathanHammond.com. And check out the material. It's well worth your time and energy, and his amazing book, so that you know, you can understand how the magic is available to you if only you reach for it. Thanks for joining. Take care. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening and rest of the week. Good night now.